Okay, hour number three. I'm Jeff Runt, here with you 6 nights a week, 3 hours a night, as we roll into election week. It's the year 2000, the election day after tomorrow, and got some interesting things planned for you as we roll through the next 3 days in which this country will make a decision. Some people say the decision is like choosing between arsenic and strychnine. I don't know. I don't know who you're going to vote for, Dr. Martin, but if you're going to vote at all. But it's my goodness, is this the best we have? That's what people keep saying.
I didn't realize how poetic you were.
Well, it's a momentary lapse. The book is The Temples of Jerusalem Forgot by Dr. Ernest L. Martin. Clearly one of the most, I think, potentially important books done on the Middle East and our ancient and contemporary history in my lifetime. This is extraordinary when you consider that for the last 100-plus years, people have been living on the wrong assumptions, and history proves them wrong, does it not?
It certainly does. And the matter of the Wailing Wall, for example, the Western Wall, I was rather shocked to find out myself about 10 years ago that Jewish participation in that particular section, which we now call the Wailing Wall, was only in effect from around 1520 A.D. onward. And the two stories, both promoted by Jewish historians of the 17th century, clearly show that it was first of all a Christian shrine, a place, and then the Muslims took it over and cleaned it up. But Jewish participation in the area of the Wailing Wall did not take place until the time of Rabbi Isaac Luria, called the Ari, or the Lion. Most Jewish people would certainly know of him, in the year 1570. And before that time, no Jewish person had ever gone to the Wailing Wall for any spiritual reason whatsoever. I mean, the one that we are seeing there in the news every day.
Is that because they knew it wasn't part of the temple?
By that time, most of the Jews considered the temple to be at the Dome of the Rock. From the time of the Crusades onward, Jeff, most people, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, accepted the Dome of the Rock. I have in my book, though, a considerable abundance evidence to show that prior to the Crusades, particularly prior to 1077 A.D., all Jews knew clearly that the temple was over the Gihon Spring that we have been talking about. And I have absolute evidence in the scriptures. I'm sure I should say in my book, in which I have material from what they call the Giza Synagogue writings, contemporary writings, which show that the temple was south of the Haram HaSharif, and down on the Ophel Mound, and it's actually in these records, which I have accumulated in my book.
Yeah,
the Wailing Wall that we have today is a modern invention, well, modern in 400 years, 380 years.
It's modern enough.
And believe it or not, this is documented very well in a, of all places, a Ministry of Defense, Israel, Ministry of Defense publication on the Western Wall. And it's all documented there by our Jewish scholars themselves that this is the case.
That's amazing. Again, this is going to make a tremendous impact at the conference in 2 weeks. We'll see.
I hope so.
Yeah, I want you to let me know via email when you get back, please, how the reception was and what happened. And I just hope this information gets out and is given proper and due consideration by all of those at the top levels of both sides in this continuing conflict, because it needs to be factored in.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I want to thank you personally for this opportunity of introducing it to your listeners, because in actual fact, your program is the first on record of giving this information out in this fashion. So I want to thank you. It's just before the conference is taking place down there. And as I said, Professor James Tabor from the University of North Carolina is going to be giving a lecture on this very subject, and it should prove to be a very exciting one. At least I would think so, because of the great importance that we see in this matter.
The emotional impact of your work will run the gamut.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I feel that what I have given is basically the truth. I would be silly to say that everything I have in the book is 100% accurate. As far as I know, it is. But the thing is, if there is a little brick here and there scarred on my evidence, the walls are going to stand. I have not the slightest doubt that what I have stated in that book is true.
Well, it's an extraordinary book to look at and to consider, and let's find out what happens. All you can do is put it out there, as they say.
You betcha.
All right. We come across another holiday season, and they seem to show up about every 6 months now. Are you noticing how time is speeding up?
Well, my goodness, yes.
I mean, it is really silly. Not only is time increasing in its rapidity, but people everywhere, Dr. Martin, seem to be on edge. They're just not. There's an undercurrent of anxiety that is international.
You're right. There's the ubiquitous anxiety that is seemingly around now in this time of great prosperity for the United States, and yet there's seemingly an uncertainty that's hovering on the horizon.
Does the Bible talk about these particular times to your satisfaction in terms of really prophetically preparing us for what we're going through now?
I personally feel so. I am. I feel that everything is on schedule as far as the prophetic scenario is concerned. What I read in the book of Zechariah, particularly the last six chapters, seem to pinpoint the effects in Jerusalem and in Israel at the present time. It also gives a very nice outcome to what will happen down there and prior to the second advent of Christ. Good times are going to be coming down there, but if the prophecies in Zechariah mean anything at all in the 12th chapter.
Yeah, and yet you did make a point earlier that this seems to be almost a cyclical buildup to not much, and then it cycles around again and again and again.
That's right, and even in the book of Isaiah, it speaks in about the 43rd chapter about former things will take place in the future, as though everything in life is cyclical.
Repetitive, yeah. It's
repetitive. And you find that also in the book of Ecclesiastes by Solomon. Mm-hmm. Several places he states that.
Well, I think, you know, one of the interesting things about your book, The Temples of Jerusalem for God, and I hope it has given adequate coverage at the conference, is that you have again elevated Christ's teachings. You brought him up a half a level or two.
I hope so.
Because his prophecy is borne out by your research now.
I gave the book to a Catholic priest up in San Francisco, and we were having some convivial time, social engagement, and he read the book and came back to me 2 days later, rather ashen-faced, to say, like you have, and I'm very thankful for your recommendation. He said this is going to actually change history, but he said, from what you have said, I cannot see any other answer but that is the truth.
Yeah.
So this goes beyond denominational lines. It's not a matter of it being Protestant or Catholic or Orthodox or Muslim or Jewish.
You're simply rediscovering.
These are clear historical facts that I'm trying to give forth to the world.
You're rediscovering our real, literal history.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And like I've said, I have a deep respect for the documents. And I mean the biblical documents, but also the historical documents.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas I have found that when people say the historical documents are exaggerating what they say, I find in most cases the exaggeration is because of our misinterpretation of history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before as well. All right, now your other book that we'll talk about here in this hour in our time remaining, and there are a number of books which you'll find all listed at Dr. Martin's website. Just go there by clicking on the information right below his name at the top of my homepage. It's real simple. If you're not online right now, it's ask, A-S-K, Elm, E-L-M, askelm.com. Maybe you can remember that, www.askelm.com. And it's a marvelous website. All right, The Star That Astonished the World. I remember when this book was revised, I think you said 94?
Yes, I brought out my final edition of it. And Jack Finnegan, Professor Finnegan, who wrote the Handbook of Biblical Chronology, I now have his approbation on my information in that book, and he's given me special notice that he has changed his mind to the fact that Jesus was born in the year 3 to 2 B.C. rather than the normal 4, 5, 6, or 7 that most of us thought of before, and that the astronomical information that we find going on at the time is rather spectacular. There was a celestial pageantry in the heavens dealing with the stellar positions as well as the planetary, lunar, and solar that really staggers the mind. And when you read my book at what was actually going on at the time, the people living there in that generation when Jesus was born, they were given a spectacular show that even Spielberg couldn't quite come up to.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like you to try and give us a mind's eye portrait of what the skies may have looked like. And again, the information in Dr. Martin's book, The Star That Astonished the World, is the bedrock for the holiday programming in over 600 planetariums in the United States and Europe. You've probably seen his shows, many of you who have been in planetariums around this time of year. So we'll hear about that and more with Dr. Ernest L. Martin in just a couple minutes.